doing the whole 6010.
Welcome in. Fantasy Focus Football is presented by Geico. Switch to Geico and see all the ways you can save. It is Tuesday, April 18th, and this is, as we mentioned, Fantasy Focus. I am Field. To my left is Mike Clay. To my right is Daniel Dopp. What's happening, gentlemen? You start, Mike.
Not too much. Actually, a lot. It's April, right?
Yeah.
Is it April?
What?
The draft is coming
You're
up.
You're already hypocrisy. Not too much. Actually, kind of a lot's going on.
But that is, in Mike's defense, there are certain things that have been said. Like, we need to retire these answers because, like, when someone asks me how I'm doing, 99.9%, I'm doing great. How are you?
That's what you're supposed to say, right?
So you're supposed to, right?
You're not supposed to engage in
what's going on.
You're not supposed to be serious with how you're really doing.
Yes. Yeah. Someone's, like, crossing you, you know, crossing you in the hallway. They're going to lunch or something, and they say, how you doing? You're supposed to say, okay, if you're like, actually, and have this long conversation, then you're kind of messing
I was walking the dog this morning. It started raining out of nowhere, and I got back home, and I was drenched.
Let's just pack that all away. Save it for another conversation.
Actually,
that's what I want to say.
Yeah, there we go. All right, so we got a lot to get to today.
So anyway, so I was at home this morning, and we're working on writing capsules, and... are you in a hurry or something? You're trying to get somewhere?
No. We just, you know, we need to get to your piece that you wrote earlier this off-season.
That's what I was doing.
Because that's what we're going to do today on the show is after a couple of pieces of news, we're going to dive into Mike's piece. The topic was what he learned from doing his projections. I'll say this a million times, and I will never feel bad about repeating it. The work that Mike does on our projections at ESPN is absolutely incredible. It is the engine behind our fantasy rankings, and there is nothing more popular for content than rankings for fantasy football. So, Mike, huge shout-out to you always. We're going to dive into that in just a bit, but right before the show, just before the show began, Adam Schefter tweeted some news that Allen Robinson has been traded to the Pittsburgh Steelers, Daniel. And my first question is, what position will he be playing? Because he's not particularly effective at wide receiver anymore.
Whoa. That's a really great question. Right before the show started, I said, are teams still interested in Allen Robinson? Because it seems like it's been a while since we've seen any kind of fantasy relevance from this guy. We obviously talked about him going to L.A. to play with his first real quarterback ever, right, in Matthew Stafford. And how did that work out for Allen Robinson?
Ask Tyler Fulgham. I don't know.
Well, the Tyler shots just never cease to exist here. I love it. But now I look at it, and it's like, okay, I feel like we're multiple years removed from Allen Robinson being a fantasy asset that we could trust, albeit with a quarterback that didn't even register at that time.
Yeah.
What's it going to mean, Mike, for Allen Robinson playing with Kenny Pickett and the rest of this Steelers offense?
Well, I mean, he's 30 years old now, and to your point, it's been a couple of years since he's been a good fantasy wide receiver. So I was already nervous about him last season, even in that Rams offense, and the targets weren't there, right? He was busy near the goal line. That was it. And that might be his role in Pittsburgh, right? I mean, you're going to have Deontay Johnson. He's going to soak up a ton of targets. Ideally, George Pickens, their second round pick last season, who did not really emerge in the second half, even after the Chase Claypool trade. They obviously want him to make a leap forward. You have Pat Freiermuth, Najee Harris. So there's not really room for Robinson to jump back into the top 20 or maybe even 30 conversation in fantasy. He's not going to be on my radar in most formats.
Well, I'll do that. I'll take that even one step further, Mike, because there are a couple portions of this conversation. We've kind of already all acknowledged that, like, Allen Robinson is no longer the player that when he signed with the Chicago Bears a handful of years ago in free agency, you're thinking to yourself, this guy's a game changer, right? Yeah. Over the past couple of seasons, he has not been a game changer, and that contract signed by the Rams last year was one of the worst in the NFL. Like, moments after it was signed. Shout out to Allen Robinson. Shout out to his agent.
Yeah.
But for as far as the Rams are concerned, a team that had a very tight rope they were walking, that's one of those deals that they regret with every fiber of their being. I think we're comfortably at the point, though, where we can acknowledge that, like, the days of Allen Robinson being either a wide receiver one for his own team or a game changer for his own team are probably long behind him. I'm not even sure there's like a medium level ceiling for Allen Robinson in Pittsburgh, because prior to this trade, we have to have our top 60 wide receiver rankings in right after the draft. So there'll be a couple of rookies that project into that top 60. I didn't have room for Allen Robinson in my top 60 in Los Angeles with a better quarterback in Matthew Stafford than Kenny Pickett and a lot less competition for targets.
Yeah.
It's Cooper Kupp, it's Tyler Higbee, and that's it in LA right now. Mike just rattled off the wide receivers, plus tight end Pat Freiermuth, plus Najee Harris, who has been heavily involved in the passing game, at least certainly was as a rookie. And you're sitting there thinking to yourself, man, this must be like, this is like an accessory piece for the Steelers, much more so than it is a major acquisition.
You're right. And their third receiver before this this trade was Calvin Austin, who didn't play last season. Mm-hmm. He was injured, right? He was a day three pick. Was he? I think he was a fourth round pick last year. So they obviously had depth concerns there. They're bringing in a veteran like Robinson, maybe to help with the development of a player like Pickens. But ideally, Robinson will be a part-time player on the field in occasional three wide sets, not a guy that's going to be a fantasy
and
factor.
A reality of fantasy football is that sometimes we rely on the economics to lead us into what the role might be. And so when he goes to Los Angeles and they pay him $15.5 million per year, you're like, okay, this guy's going to play a ton and see a lot of targets. He did play a ton. That was for sure in Los Angeles. He just did not scoop up that many targets or touchdowns. We, as of this moment that we're having this conversation, don't know exactly how much Pittsburgh's going to be on the hook for. My guess is this could be like a couple million bucks, which if you're paying $2 million to a wide receiver, there is absolutely no harm whatsoever in him being a role player who, you know, he might have 35 catches this year, and it would still be a justifiable acquisition for the Steelers if they pay a seventh-round pick and $2 million in cash to acquire Allen Robinson. So a bigger name than I think fantasy impact right now. Again, I did not have Robinson inside my top 60. He will not move closer to my top 60 by getting traded to the Steelers.
By the way, the Rams have Cooper Kupp and then Ben Skowronek and Tutu Atwell.
Yikes.
They're not done at wide receiver. Actually, they might need to just trade down with all of their draft picks just to collect enough picks to fill out a roster this season. They are in very rough shape on both sides of the football. It is very much a rebuild for the Rams. Aside, of course, I mean, you still have Stafford, Kupp. I mean, that's it. That's, they're going to have to run things through those two. Of course, Aaron Donald on defense, that's about it. So rebuild is in effect, and we'll see how wide receiver shapes out behind Cooper Kupp.
You know, the nice thing is it doesn't make a difference who else is on that team, because it feels like Matthew Stafford can still throw it to Cooper Kupp 17 times, even
that's
though
plan,
every
right
team
now
knows that it's going to happen. It still works every single time.
So I have Cooper Kupp number two in my wide receiver rankings for a lot of reasons, not the least of which is what you just described. And just to put a little bit of more perspective on what Mike just talked about in terms of the depth for the Rams right now, you are allowed to have 90 players under contract during the offseason. There are teams, I believe the Broncos are currently at the top with 79 players under contract, which means they'll have room for their draft picks and then maybe a couple undrafted free agents. They could certainly waive players currently on the roster.
Do most teams not carry 90 into the draft because they're just knowing they're going to have to cut people?
I would say right now the average is probably like 65 or so.
Okay. And some teams are cutting players right now, a few guys just to clear some room.
Yeah, the Seahawks waived five guys yesterday as an example. But let's say the average is somewhere around 65. The Rams are at 44.
Oh,
by
my
far,
gosh.
Ludicrous. Like, it's not even close. In the NFL, again, we'll get into the weeds here for a second, but in the NFL, 53 players count against the salary cap. During the offseason, the NFL makes an exception. It's the top 51 cap. It's a bit of a buffer for teams to have more flexibility. So most teams, if you have 65 players, the bottom 14 don't count against the cap. For the Rams, they don't have a top 51. They have a top 44. Like, it is, I know this is like super nerdy, but it is absurd how few players they have on their roster. On April 18th, if you are out there listening to this podcast right now and you can run like under a 6 second 40 or you're over 225 pounds, find a way to get outside the Rams facility and just start catching passes, because you might have a chance to get signed by the Rams.
Yeah. And by the way, it's not like they have a lot of good players and they just don't have a lot of depth. It is, you know, I do them unit grades, kind of keep track of where I feel teams are throughout the offseason. This is the worst defense on paper I've ever seen since I've been in this industry. And it includes Aaron Donald, which is saying something. So they have a lot of work to do. It's going to be interesting to see how they put this together for week one.
That is patently absurd that a defense with Aaron Donald could be the worst you've ever seen.
People are going to be like, there's no way. Look at the roster.
You know, that's a fun game. If you're listening out there right now, do us a favor, all right? Take away Aaron Donald. Name five Rams projected starters.
Okay. All right. On the whole roster. Okay.
On the defense side of the ball.
On defense?
Yeah. Five Rams projected
starters. I don't know if people can name
one. Sebastian.
Can you name one?
Joseph Day. He passed for the Chargers now.
Dang it.
Good player, though.
There's only two on the roster who played more than half the snaps last year. Yeah, Aaron Donald's one, and the other is Ernest Jones.
It is, but I'm telling you, this is like, it is alarming how this roster has taken shape in the post-Super Bowl win, and 20 years from now, all we'll care about is that Super Bowl win, right? But it is a reminder of, like, the slippery slope when teams go all in. This is simultaneously best and worst-case scenario. 1 year of success for what could end up being like multiple years of pain, because the Rams have been, they had the worst record ever in the season following a Super Bowl, and it might get worse. It might get worse this season, which is hard to believe for a team that has Matthew Stafford, Aaron Donald, Cooper Kupp, and is coached by Sean McVay. Mm-hmm. So they don't have the number one pick in this year's draft because they don't have a pick at all in the first or second round. Maybe in the second round, but not in the first round. But they may be in play for the number one pick next year. We'll see. 2024, Caleb Williams might not have to move too far from USC to LA. But let's focus in on the current draft because we're 9 days away from the NFL draft. And, you know, I don't know exactly what to do with this from a fantasy perspective. But as things have progressed in the pre-draft process with, you know, pro days and pre-draft visits and private workouts and all that, one thing has become clearer and clearer is that Bryce Young is going to be the likely number one overall pick in the draft, Daniel. And so I'll just ask you this. This is a fantasy football show.
Yep.
I say Bryce Young to the Carolina Panthers. You say, from a fantasy perspective, what?
Good luck. And I hope that they acquire more.
To
Bryce Young. And I hope they acquire more pieces to be able to put in that offense, because the cupboard is pretty bare for whatever quarterback comes into that offense. The guys that he's throwing to, Terrace Marshall, I mean, I'm not even sure. When I look at this offense, right, I understand that they added Miles Sanders at the running back position. They're going to try to focus on that. But there's not a ton of guys to come in. This is a tough team for a rookie quarterback to come in. Not someone that I think is going to have a ton of fantasy relevance here in week one. Maybe a deeper dynasty pick. But, boy, Mike, I don't look at this and say, this kid's going to come in and all of a sudden light Carolina on fire. I just don't think there's enough, like I said, in the cupboard for him right now to be able to do that. They need more pieces.
Yeah, a lot of veterans and their top two receivers have had injury issues, right? At DJ Chark and Adam Thielen. You know, Thielen's 33. Chark's missed a ton of action over the last few years. So, Mahiden Hurst, a tight end, that's going to be their core of skill guys. So it's obviously serviceable
that's
veterans
not a great
to some extent.
Score.
But
yeah.
We don't, you know, Field, you mentioned fantasy. I mean, from a fantasy perspective, our expectations for rookie quarterbacks are low anyway, right? So we're not going to draft him right away. I mean, super flex drafts will be an early first round pick, and in rookie drafts and normal rookie drafts will be around two pick, whatever it may be. You're developing and you're holding him and hoping for a year or two breakout. But he's, again, that offense is not one we're going to be looking at this year. Mm-mm. Under new coach Frank Reich and saying, here we go, you know, offensive juggernaut. It's just not going to happen.
It's interesting. The only rookie quarterbacks that we will be interested in would be those that can run, but yep, oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes, the quarterbacks that are most prodigious as runners are the furthest behind in their throwing development, mm-hmm, right? And again, that's not to apply a one-size-fits-all tag on them, but just generally speaking, that's how it goes. In the case of the top four prospects this year, there is one who's a tremendous runner in Anthony Richardson, mm-hmm, but we don't know if he's even going to start this year. We don't know where he's going to be playing, but there are some who believe he would be best suited for a redshirt year. So I'm not sure any of the four quarterbacks have a real clear path to be an obvious top 20 candidate this year amongst quarterbacks.
Did I hear Dan Orlovsky talk about how any team that took Anthony Richardson should be starting him halfway through the season on NFL Live earlier this week? Maybe it was last week, Field. I don't know if you remember that at all. But I there is so much. I think you look back at Malik Willis last year and everyone was intrigued. Everyone, as in like fans, were just intrigued by what he could potentially be. He was so great from the ground perspective, I guess, you know, you could say that there was a lot that he brought to the table, mm-hmm, but that just was never going to materialize as a fantasy asset because he just wasn't going to get the opportunity to play quarterback, it doesn't feel like.
Yeah,
so
he got a brief opportunity and it didn't go
did
well.
Not
he was
go
benched
well
in time for the playoffs. So, yeah, I'm with you. I'm usually just going to avoid rookie quarterbacks. You know, the first year two is when you buy in, right?
Yep.
Trevor Lawrence was a terrific example of that last season. So I'm excited for these guys in 2024 this year. Not too concerned.
I'm with you as well. So let's dive into Mike's piece. It's what he learned from doing projections. And Mike, before we get to what you learned, I did want to make one note because I mentioned that rankings will be coming out, mm-hmm, right after the draft. And you and I are having some conversations about players that we saw differently before the show. And one thing that I think is really important to note is that your projections do not align perfectly with your rankings. Mm-hmm. There are players who are projected higher than where they ranked. There are players that are ranked higher than where they are projected. I know that's a mouthful, but the point is that just because Mike has them ordered a certain way, 1 through 60 in the projections, that's not going to be exactly how they look in the rankings, and that can be for a number of factors that you can dive into on a case-by-case basis. But I wanted to mention that just in case you ever hear a disconnect between how Mike's talking about his ranks versus what you see in the projections if you're in the draft tool early, mm-hmm, or you're just sort of searching around on ESPN.com.
And just a quick note, the main reason for that is generally going to be missed games, right? So, for example, Kyler Murray, you'll see 32nd or something in the projections. He's projected to miss 7 games, right, coming off that ACL. So I'm going to have him ranked like 17th. That's generally going to be the reason for that. Otherwise, they're going to be pretty aligned. There's some upside and floor mixed in there that's going to move the needle a little bit, but in a nutshell, those are the primary reasons.
Yeah, and by the way, when you said he is projected to miss 7 games, that's your projection. There hasn't been any, you know,
official
concrete, yeah. Hey, Kyler is going to return no sooner than week 8 this upcoming year. But let's begin with some of the things that you learned, Mike, at the running back spot. And Christian McCaffrey, one of the most valuable players in fantasy for the past several years, but how valuable is he?
Yeah, well, I mean, he's been top 5 in fantasy points per game each of the last 5 seasons. So when he's on the field, we know he's terrific. And you know, basically what I wrote in this piece was I'm not convinced I want to take him with the first overall pick. So top 5, sure. But does he have that elite ceiling we've seen in years past? Maybe not. And here's the reason.
Can I guess?
49ers, yes.
2 words. Elijah Mitchell.
That is correct. And, you know, we've talked about this on the pod a little bit before. And the team likes Elijah Mitchell, right? Yeah. They feel like they found a gem. And when he has been active, he has been a big factor in this offense, and that includes after the McCaffrey trade last season. Now, look, McCaffrey was terrific once acquired, but check this out. I'm going to look at the splits here. 6 games with Christian McCaffrey and Elijah Mitchell, and then 7 games without Elijah Mitchell on the field. I'm going to exclude McCaffrey's debut with the team because he was playing a limited role. So the difference in snaps, 82% versus 63%. 17.7 carries versus 11.2 carries, yeah, with Mitchell. And 6.4 targets versus 5.2 targets. The fantasy point total difference is 27.1 without Mitchell. But when he was playing, it was 16.7. That is a huge difference. You put those two numbers together, all the games together, it looks like an elite fantasy season. But what happens if Mitchell plays 15 games this season? They split carries. Mitchell is the guy that's in there at the goal line.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza, better because it has to be.
You took McCaffrey early in the first round. You're going to be pulling your hair out watching Mitchell just soak up 150, 170 carries and 8 touchdowns in this offense. So some mild concerns. It's enough for me to knock him down a couple spots and maybe go with someone else with that first overall pick. I have Justin Jefferson at number 1. Still a good player, but again, we're talking about that key spot, that number 1 spot. Do you take McCaffrey? I'm leaning away for that reason.
Yes, why I have, and I do have a top tier of running backs. It's 2-man tier. It's Christian McCaffrey. Agreed. And Austin Eckler, but it's a pretty clear, like, when I'm, it's hard to articulate this in words, but just like for visual purposes, when I have my document of rankings, I use like gradations. So like the boldest players or the top of the tier is like in like double bold, and then it gets like slightly less bold, and then like by the end of the tier it's like thin text, but Helvetica. Like Christian McCaffrey,
it's, yeah, invisible,
like, yeah, you know, Austin Eckler is like bold, right? It's like big fat letters as the, yeah, top of the running back tier. Christian McCaffrey is still bold,
he's
right, but
Sans.
It's like a, yep, fairly different shade width of bold,
yeah,
than Austin Eckler, if that makes any sense whatsoever. But I agree with you, Mike. It's hard to make the case for Christian McCaffrey ahead of Austin Eckler, assuming that both stay healthy and assuming that Elijah Mitchell plays the role that we have grown accustomed to him playing. Next one's really interesting, Mike. And there's been a lot of buzz this offseason about Tony Pollard, of course, because Ezekiel Elliott is no longer there. But does he belong in that very top tier of running backs?
Yeah, so I'm actually high on Pollard. I'm going to talk about some concerns perhaps with his ceiling in the passing game here, but I do have him right now RB8. Now, Ronald Jones is number 2 at running back for that team right now, and they're probably not done adding at that position, so we'll see who that player is. But for now, assuming he's the lead back without substantial competition, I think he'll be an RB1. He's been extremely efficient since he's entered the league, top 3 at running back in pretty much all of the key categories. The note I made in this article, though, is that if you look at Mike McCarthy's past 11 offenses, they've all been below average in running back target share. They averaged a 15% share. That's well below the 20% share across the NFL. Last year, Pollard was 16th in targets with 54. I have him at 51 for this season. So maybe that's enough to not get him to launch kind of into that elite category, like a top 5 season. But do I think he can be a top 10 or 12 running back? Absolutely.
Thoughts, Daniel?
I feel like in looking at what is going to open up here, right? Obviously, Ezekiel Elliott leaves, and there's a lot to be able to figure out with Tony Pollard as the lead back of this offense. I just don't know what they're going to do with him full-time like we've talked about. Stefania obviously has had a lot that she said along the way. I love Tony Pollard. I love what I saw out of him last year. My question is, what are they going to add, like we're talking about, behind him to be able to help keep him on the field? Who's going to be that secondary piece? Because right now, if I'm just thinking about Tony Pollard getting 20 touches a game, 20 carries, I'm thrilled with it. I'm all in on that. But is that what we think Dallas is going to do? Or are they going to go out and find a way to make sure that, sure, he's going to be our lead back, but he's maybe going to be closer to 15 to 17 touches rather than the 20 to 25 that a real lead back would be?
In terms of the short list of things that I'm most eager to see in the draft that have fantasy ties, what the Cowboys do at running back is very much at the top of the list or near the top of the list, because I've done a bunch of the mock draft special shows with Mel and Todd, yep, and Mort has been our insider in a couple of them, and he's made reference to the Cowboys' desire to add someone to complement Tony Pollard. Is in the inference almost being like, Tony Pollard is not going to be this 325 touch total touch player for the Cowboys in 2023, even if the depth chart currently suggests that is possible. Could they be in the mix for Bijan Robinson? This is not a great running back draft class, but as we have learned a million times over, you can always find capable running backs in rounds 2 through 7. It does not have to be round 1. So he is a player that I have, like, preparing to adjust my rank after the draft weekend. He's currently at RB9 for me, like right around Nick Chubb and Joe Mixon. I think he is probably, I think Tony Pollard's a better player than Joe Mixon now. I do. I think he is a more, I think he's a more explosive, certainly a better pass catcher, even though Mixon isn't a depth pass catcher. Tony Pollard was a wide receiver in college. I just think the volume you can count on for Joe Mixon as of right now, when you look at their running back depth chart, kind of gives him a bit of an edge, or at least a little bit of a tiebreaker over Tony Pollard, even if I think Pollard has a much higher ceiling if things break right for him.
By the way, I'm glad you guys just talked there for, you know, a little radio magic talking for a couple minutes, because as you were talking, I shifted in my chair.
Yeah, are you okay?
I got a horrible Charlie horse.
Oh, yeah, no.
I'm sitting here screaming on the inside, screaming. And I had to adjust myself there, but I'm coming back now. I'm all right.
Okay,
all right. I don't know. That was crazy. I'm getting old, people.
Not that my daughter is like fully capable of speaking yet, but every once in a while, like, she'll just start to make faces and you're not exactly sure what she's trying to articulate.
That was me right there.
Sometimes it's like, I just went to the bathroom. Can you please change me?
Right. It wasn't that.
Sometimes it's a little bit, it's not that. Sometimes it's just her making faces because she's a silly 1-year-old. But I was a little bit nervous for you for a second there, Mike.
Oh, my God. All right. I'm all right now.
We referenced Kyler Murray a bit earlier on. Again, your projections have him missing 7 games this year. But part of the secret sauce for Kyler for many years, or for his entire career, because he had Cliff Kingsbury there, was that that team got up, got set, and snapped the football. Do you expect that to be the case again this year?
I don't think so. And you're exactly right. That's something we've noticed over the last few years. Extremely fast-paced offense, for sure. And obviously, with Kingsbury gone, we expect that to change up now. To what extent is the question, but what I looked at is Kevin Stefanski's offense. Why? Okay. Because Drew Petzig, the new offensive coordinator and play caller, worked for Stefanski for quite a while. And you look at the last few years of Stefanski's offense, whether it was the tail end there with Minnesota or now in Cleveland, very slow, very run heavy. They barely changed at all when Deshaun Watson took over last year as well, which was something that raised an eyebrow for me and something I'm thinking about as I evaluate the Browns. But, you know, just the fact that, you know, that's notable to an extent. It's an, you know, he's in charge now, so he might not follow that script per se. But the fact that we're talking about the most pass heavy or the most fast paced offense in the league over the past few years compared to what could be average, you know, that's going to take away plays and snaps and opportunities and targets, carries, all those things. So it's something, it's a little thing, right? But it's one of those things that gets factored into projections and could be a difference of 50 snaps over a full season. That's all fantasy points taken away.
Can I ask you, Field?
Please,
I want to know.
Ask me whatever.
There's a lot when I look at this offense, right? Obviously, Kyler going to miss a handful of games. We're not sure how many yet. Cliff Kingsbury, no longer there. That front office and what is going on with their leadership. There's been a lot of turmoil for the Arizona Cardinals this offseason, just off the field. When you look at what this offense is going to do without Kyler for at least 4, 5, 6 games, how do you even look at the rest of these wide receivers? And we've talked about DeAndre Hopkins maybe on the move, right? DeAndre Hopkins had 10 or more targets in 7 of his 9 games as a Cardinal last year. He was unbelievable for Kyler Murray.
Yeah.
If he's not in Arizona, I don't know what this offense is going to look like with Kyler Murray missing a handful of games and then the rest of these guys.
It depends, right?
I was going to say, and by the way, I'll just add this on to what Daniel said. Zach Ertz might miss half the season, too. He's coming off an ACL. Well.
Which is almost like forgotten because so much went wrong for the Cardinals down the stretch last year. That kind of slid under the radar as far as ACL tears go. But it depends for one important reason. Who's the quarterback in place of Kyler Murray?
Right.
If it's Colt McCoy, I actually think I feel fine about DeAndre Hopkins if he is still in Arizona. I have him as like wide receiver 16, and I would feel just fine about that. As a matter of fact, you can recall last year when Kyler, this was before he got hurt, I think, or maybe did Kyler got hurt briefly, like not an ACL
tear.
Right.
Missed
he
a couple weeks.
Briefly, yeah. Prior to that, earlier in the season, and Shefty on our podcast talked about how there were some people in the building in Arizona, and there's been a ton of change, obviously, who felt like the offense ran pretty darn well with Colt McCoy under center. But Daniel, how about the idea that, like, if you're the Cardinals, and you're as bad as I think we think they are going to be this year, beyond that, you have plenty of motivation to get Kyler Murray back to 100% and not worry about rushing him back in 2023. Are we even sure Kyler plays next year?
No.
ACL tear.
Definitely
not. That was like November. That was like December, right? Because it was a Monday night football game late in the season, right? Crazier things have happened than a guy not playing all or most of the season. And if they're 1-7 by the time he's ready to go, what's the point in bringing him back? So he's an interesting one.
What are the chances that with the Cardinals Cardinal again, and after taking a quarterback 3 years ago, then they took Kyler, and now they're thinking, what if?
Yeah,
I mean, they're in a
just
spot.
Just financially,
right?
They can't do it.
Okay,
like when they did the last time around. Yes, it was wild to go Josh Rosen 10, and then Kyler 1. But at least with Josh Rosen, you were able to. We ended up trading them, as a matter of fact, to the Dolphins. Remember that one?
Draft day trade
4 years ago. But at least at that point, it was just a different financial consideration. You are so dug in financially with Kyler right now that it would just be malpractice unless you had a Kyler trade lined up for a bunch of draft capital to use that third overall pick.
Probably not the year where you're going to have a lot of draft capital in trading for Kyler coming off of an
ACL. Yeah, it would be tough to do exactly what you just referenced. Yep. So I think, Daniel, when all of this settles, like Kyler is still the long-term quarterback option going into 2024. I just don't know how much he'll play in 2023, but there are so many questions about this Cardinals roster.
Yep.
So many. Like, it's crazy to think that right now, like, the guys that you feel most certain about are, like, DeAndre Hopkins, who might get traded, and James Conner, who's an aging running back at a position where it's become a young man's game. Like, that tells you everything you need to know about just how much of a mess it is right now
in Arizona. That division's looking great. Do we just pick apart the Rams, the Cardinals? I mean, Seahawks looking pretty. Yeah. 49ers looking pretty right now.
Let's move forward to Green Bay, Mike, because at the end of last year, there was no player that was more fun to roster amongst the wide receivers added on the waiver wire than Christian Watson, but he kept scoring touchdowns, and you tell us all the time, like, be careful chasing those touchdowns, but was there anything about his performance last year that gave you confidence it could be repeatable?
You know what? 23% target share, I would say that. If he matches that this season, even without Aaron Rodgers, he should be in good shape for a top 30, maybe even a top 20 season. Now it's about 6.5 targets per game. But look, after week 10, 35 touches, 584 yards, 8 touchdowns. He was 10th in fantasy points. His efficiency was outstanding. He was in the 85th percentile or better in yards per catch, yards per target, average depth of target, receiving yards after the catch, and yards per route run. So they fed him the ball. Once they put him on there and said, here, you're going to play 80, 90% of the snaps, they fed it to him, and it worked out well. I mean, there's a reason they trade 4 picks, I think it was, 3 or 4 picks to move up to draft him early in the second round last season. They needed a featured number one target, and it looked pretty good. So I'm buying in on Watson right now. They're not done yet. They could be in the Hopkins market. They could make another trade. They could draft someone, whatever it may be. Romeo Doubs right now is their number two receiver.
Hold on, but stop there.
Okay.
Challenge again. Trivia challenge.
Uh-oh.
Name a third Packers wide receiver. This is like the Rams defensive player thing.
So Antonio Romeo Doubs, Freeman. Christian Watson, and technically right now still Randall Cobb.
Nope.
Free agent. I know, right? That's where we're at right now with this Packers roster.
I think it's Samurai Toure, right? Sixth round or seventh round.
Yeah, that's probably be their next man up, and then what would it be? Would it be like...
I don't know.
It'd be like who? I'm not talking about like who's there. I'm talking about like who would you have the fourth most confidence in?
Man. I don't know if I have a good one.
Can we bring back Jeff Janis right now?
Yeah.
Yes, please. Saginaw Valley State.
Yeah, right? Baby. No, it's, I mean, Juwan Winfrey, maybe?
I think so. That might be it.
That's my guess. I mean, I have no idea. But that shapes up nicely for Christian Watson, Daniel, because targets are king in fantasy football for wide receivers. He should see plenty of them.
He should. I guess I just really have one question, Mike. Can Jordan you Love? Text me your dealer's number at the end? Because whatever you were smoking, man, I want some of it.
What?
Wide receiver 20 for Christian Watson? Are you serious?
What? Is this biased?
Wide receiver 20.
He was 10th last year when he was a full-time player.
So
what are we talking about here?
Okay. He scored 99.2 fantasy points in four games. 99.2 in four games. In those games, he had four catches, and three catches. Okay? The rest of the season, the other 10 games, he only had 64.9 fantasy points.
Okay, but he was not playing early in the season.
Everything.
That doesn't
right.
count.
And
they, towards those don't
the,
count.
And towards the end of the year, outside of those four games, you want to take the games after that? It's substantially less. He only had two other games the rest of the year outside of those four where he even hit double digits. One of them was against the Detroit Lions secondary, so that really doesn't count. Okay? Because they were awful last year, and we all know that.
Yeah.
But you're telling me we're going from Aaron Rodgers and what is this pass-heavy offense towards Christian Watson. Not pass-heavy offense, but like he's getting his target share, which I did not see in the same way. And now we're going to go to Jordan Love and the idea that because they're behind so much, they're going to have to throw to Christian Watson.
Well, they have to throw to someone. You can't even name a third receiver on the team. So he should see 9,
wide
10, 11
receiver
targets.
20. Wide receiver 20 after scoring all of his touchdowns in four games in the middle of the season feels a lot more like Gabe Davis to me than Amon-Ra St. Brown.
They have Stephon Diggs in that offense, too. I mean, that's a little different situation. And there's a little projection in here, right?
Totally.
I'm expecting more of a target share and more reliance on Watson. And you look at you're looking at that team and you're Matt LaFleur and you're thinking, how do we design this offense, right? You're going to run it through Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon out of the backfield and Christian Watson. That's I actually pulled up the depth chart. Juwan Winfrey's not even there. It's Bo Melton and Jeff Cotton. You know them guys?
Rutgers legend.
Former Seahawk, right?
Yeah.
Seventh round pick, I think. So, I mean, they're going to feature him right now. Now, again, that could change on draft weekend. We'll see. But for now, I'd be in on Watson. I'd be excited for him.
I have Watson seven slots lower than Mike, which we were having a conversation again before the show about how, I don't think that 20 versus 27 is as dramatic as it may sound. Like, it's not like Christian Watson. Like, I think you have him ahead of Terry McLaurin. I have him behind Terry McLaurin. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like it's a bunch of bums that are in between Watson and where I have him ranked versus where Mike has him ranked. It's all really good players. I'd say my reservations, and reservations not exactly the right word, because I still have him as a strong candidate to be a starter in a lot of leagues, would be that it's not the volume, because it's in part the vibe. It's how is he utilized? Because I don't know if you have his ADOT offhand right now, but
it
I'm
was
guessing.
Very high.
Yeah, very high last year. And if he's getting a lot of targets down the field, like that's a good thing, but
what's
the efficiency is going to be low.
He didn't
But
get
I would
a lot.
Rather see him, like, I would like to see his ADOT decrease by like 30% this year, but his targets to increase by like 30% this year. I don't think he had even a 10 target game last year. So if you have 8 to 10 targets per game for Christian Watson.
Now with
sign
Jordan
me
Love.
Up.
With
right?
Jordan Love under center?
That's okay. Mm-hmm. Like we were just talking about like Colt McCoy operated that offense. Like, you know, even if Jordan Love is like somewhere around the 20th best passing quarterback, you can lead a wide receiver to fantasy success. I just want the opportunities to be a bit more efficient than where they were last year. That's the concern that I would have to the extent that a player can present concerns as wide receiver 20.
Yeah, the efficient was great. I know what you mean, though. You want more high percentage touches, but they also, I mean, I'm talking about a 23% target share, 6.5 targets per game. Plus, he carried the football, too. I mean, they were designing plays and featuring him last year, and that was after he missed a huge chunk of the first half of the season. Total. I mean, this is year two.
There was Alan Lazar,
came
Randall
from a small
Cobb.
School.
Yeah, no,
there's a lot of reasons for excitement there. I'd buy in on a breakout for him.
No, I'm excited about Christian Watson. There are just a few players that, again, they're like Chris Godwin was one of the names that we debated before the show, and I just said, Mike, you know, we like for me, the reason why I would have Godwin higher than Christian Watson is that if you had to tell me that one of those guys is going to catch 100 passes next year, my guess is it's Chris Godwin, right? Like, he's a much better bet to catch 100 passes, but if you had to tell me one of those guys has 15 touchdowns next year, the much better bet is Christian Watson because he's an athletic freak who could score an 80-yard touchdown every game if things went right.
Yeah, and speaking of which, Watson tripled Godwin's touchdowns last year. I think he had like 9, and Godwin had 3 last season with Tom Brady in that high-volume offense. Anyway, I hear you.
What if we did that thing where we took out the one game where he had an unbelievable 3-touchdown game and you look at how many points he scored? Everything you're talking about Christian Watson is like it's saying that because of what happened last year,
yeah,
different offense, still never had 10
same
plus
offense,
targets.
Different quarterback.
Different quarterback.
This is shaping up nicely for some good preseason debate between the two.
And this is year two leap. I'm not saying because he had an off the charts touchdown rate. Like, you would expect some of that efficiency, especially in touchdowns, to come back to earth. It's year two, right? You expect a leap in year two.
But
when a guy plays that well for half the season, then goes into year two, I think there's reason for excitement. When there's no competition,
you know for a fact they're taking a wide receiver at 15, right?
I thought they were taking a tight end.
Because they're
going to trade Aaron Rodgers and then take a wide receiver in the first round, finally. Last one here, Mike. And I almost feel like we need a viewer warning right now. Don't get mad at us. These are just facts here that we're going to discuss. I know Kyle Pitts was the biggest disappointment amongst tight ends last year, maybe in all of fantasy, Mike, across every position. Mm-hmm. But are you buying the idea that 2023 could be the re-breakout year? I mean, 1,000-plus yards as a rookie. It was pretty darn good.
Post-hype breakout. Take the discount if you can. I'm in. Look, the only reason he may not break out yet is obviously the run-heavy scheme we saw last season. I don't think it'll be quite that dramatic as it was last season. They do still have some quarterback concerns. And he's still only 17 years old. I don't think people realize that, right?
Stop.
No, he's not. He's 22. He'll be 22 to open the season.
That was a really good joke.
22 years old. And look, we forget this because of what happened last year, but he was over 1,000 yards and was a number 6 scoring fantasy tight end as a rookie when he was just 20 years old. So last year was rough, but the observation I made in this article was that, yes, he missed 7 games. Yes, he only had 2 top 12 fantasy weeks, but he had a 27% target share. When they threw the ball, they featured him. Only Mark Andrews had a higher target share last season than Kyle Pitts. He was very, very busy last year. Also, Arthur Smith, you look at all 4 seasons he's been a play caller, they've all had a target share of at least 25%. They did add Jonnu Smith. I've seen some chatter maybe Jonnu Smith takes away some of that volume. I don't think so. Not worried about that. He didn't work out in a good situation in New England. He'll have a role, but there's still plenty of room here for Kyle Pitts to bounce back. By the way, number 1 at tight end and average depth of target both seasons. Yeah. This guy still has a massive ceiling. I'm in if I can get him at a discount.
So things are shaping up nicely for Kyle Pitts. The wide receiver room still very much a work in progress. I would be a bit more nervous if they take Bijan Robinson 8th overall, which I could totally see, by the way, because Arthur Smith had Derrick Henry in Tennessee for those years, and it would be the closest thing to Derrick Henry in Atlanta. But here's a little exercise here. Top 5 tight ends in my rankings, and you can debate if these are the same 5 in your top 5. Travis Kelce.
TK.
Mark Andrews. TJ Hockenson.
Yeah.
Darren Waller.
Yep.
George Kittle. Those are the 5, right? Name a tight end beyond that. Just name anyone that you like for fantasy this year. And let's talk about their mitigating factors compared to Kyle Pitts' mitigating factors.
I'd say you can make the case. I know I do have I have Goddard ahead of him.
Yep.
And then I have Pitts. And then I have Freiermuth. So you can put them in any order you want. I think the other 2 guys are probably a little safer, higher floor. Pitts a little more volatile, but the ceiling with Pitts. Look, if we came out, we're sitting here next January and we say Kyle Pitts was tight end 2, or tight end 1. It all came together.
I'm not going that far with Travis Kelce still playing.
But
I hear you.
But nonetheless, in the top 5. Yeah. It only took him in the top 5 to be that, be in a featured target, not to be a blocker. He's a featured pass catcher. So
just to play that,
he has
out
that
from,
ceiling.
Mike. Pat Freiermuth now has 3 wide receivers, legitimately, right?
Right.
Like Allen Robinson alongside Deontay and George Pickens as well. Not a massive touchdown maker and not going to have nearly the yak or really even the average yards per catch as Kyle Pitts probably has. I'm just, you can make the counterpoint to other tight ends just as fervently as you can for Kyle Pitts, and you're going to be getting him at a discounted price compared to last year. Dallas Goedert is an example.
Not a touchdown scorer, misses a lot of games.
Yeah, missed time. They have 2 alpha wide receivers. They could run the crap out of it. They had 32 rushing touchdowns last year. By the way, they could just slightly regress as an offense, and total scoring could be down a bit in Philadelphia. I know it's easy to poke holes in Kyle Pitts based off things that haven't happened the past couple of years. I'm just telling you, at tight end, there are very few guys that have anything close to a clean resume.
And I think that while not necessarily a top 4 or 5 guy, Dalton Schultz was a guy that a lot of people would target last year because of where he was at. Now moving to the Texans, who knows what he's going to be like. Mike, do you know where you have Schultz ranked right now?
13, I believe. 12, I think 13.
A little bit higher. I think I'm tied on 11, maybe.
But that's still quite a bit lower than you had Schultz last year. Last year was a top 6, 7, mm-hmm. 8 tight end.
He was tremendous whenever him and Dak played together, he was great. But in games without Dak, he was not nearly as effective. And another team that we'll see what happens at the draft, because the Texans have some concerns right now in terms of offensive skill. Yeah, well, I think that they are not taking a quarterback number 2 overall. Famous last words that pretty much guarantees it. It's a great article, Mike. So it's available right now on ESPN.com. And again, Mike's projections are the lifeblood of basically everything we do at ESPN for our fantasy content. So be sure that you check that out. In the meantime, he's Mike Clay NFL on Twitter. He's Daniel Dopp on Twitter. There's no underscore, is there?
No underscore.
You just keep it
simple.
Right to the point.
That's right.
We'll talk to you guys again on Thursday. Stefania is back. We're going to talk about some lessons that maybe we learned and how they might impact our draft strategies for the upcoming season.
If you need a stick of Tide, Field is your guy. If you're in Bristol or in Farmington, you should find another ride. Candidly, he hates Mike Clay, and you know that it's a fact, every Yater's gonna Yate, 'cause he's on TV every day, a spicy tomato who's got the stats, and tweets that'll make you laugh, he's our favorite host, and everybody knows his name, he's Field.